Hi, I'm Alex Fracon. You're listening to My Therapist and I, a podcast that isn't just about therapy, it is therapy. More specifically, my therapy. In this week's episode, I discuss my most recent EMDR session with Dr. Steve. And we talk a lot about my history with anxiety, the shame I felt around that anxiety, and what it might have been like to experience some support. So, hope you enjoy.
Ooh, Dr. Steve. Traffic today.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Another week, another episode. Dr. Steve, yeah, is wearing the same thing. Steve Harvey, blah, blah, blah.
I noticed you're wearing HF. You've got an HF hat. Yep. There was one in the hallway.
So it's a Hendrickson Foundation. They provide financial assistance to hockey programs for people with disabilities.
Yeah.
So they support Minnesota Sled Hockey, Minnesota Special Hockey, Minnesota Hockey for the Blind. And then they support the Warrior Foundation, which is a hockey group for veterans. All of those programs exist in Minnesota and
abroad,
nationally.
Yeah.
So the Hendrickson Foundation has created sort of a connective tissue between all the different states. They just had their big tournament where 76 teams across the country came to play.
But do they know that you have absconded with all their promotional material?
My company, Cool Story, has done work for them.
Okay.
We've created stuff for them, like partners, if you will. The Hands of Time Cup.
Yes.
We raised over $10,000 for the Hendrickson Foundation. So, yeah, they send me hats and stuff. I have, do you want one? I have, 10 hats.
Yeah, I want one.
Okay. You can take the one that's hanging. That one's going to go to Scott. It's a gift for him when I go on my... I told you I'm going on a mystery bachelor party.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Do you know where it is yet?
No. No.
You're going to Kabul.
I told you that, yeah.
Yeah.
He keeps making that joke.
Yeah. What if you just came to Woodbury where I live?
I would be so pissed if it was a domestic flight to I made,
Madison.
Nebraska, or I'd just be like, damn it, Scott. But I'd tip my cap. But yeah, I got a hat for you. I got koozies too, but you're not going to do anything with a koozie.
Does anybody do anything with a koozie?
Yeah, they use it to drink alcohol, Dr. Steve.
Yeah, but do they work?
They do. They keep the can cold. They do. Mm. As someone who has done daytime
drinking?
Lake drinking. Yeah, the
lake
koozie.
Drinking.
The koozie is place. It's a good invention.
Okay.
So enough banter. Let's get down to business.
Business, okay. All right. Let's bring it.
Dr. Steve fixed me. He told me to just stop thinking
just
so
stop
much.
Stop thinking.
So that was really helpful. Hadn't considered that.
But the message was be kind.
Be kind. Yeah.
The thinking's probably not going to stop.
Yeah. Allow yourself. Yeah. Be kind to yourself.
And to those people out there who are judging Alex for being an overthinker.
It's cool.
Be kind too.
Yeah. Yeah. I sometimes think that people need to be mean in order to understand what they're hurting about. I mean, being mean is just a way of trying to process your hurt. So if people got to beat up on me a little bit and I can continue to be it's like that scene in Good Will Hunting. It's not your fault. It's not your fault. And he's like, shut up. No, no, no. It's not your fault. And then he just starts crying. I always do that to my friends. If they're being wieners, I'll just be like, it's not your fault.
It's the second time you've made a Good Will Hunting reference.
Well,
and I think secretly you want me to be more like Robin Williams in that movie.
No.
Not even secretly, just overtly.
Okay, well, there you go. You challenge accepted or not? what were we just talking about before the Good Will Hunting? Oh yeah, so if people got to beat up on me, and I can just continue to be like, it's okay. I know you're going through some stuff, and that allows them to be like, I am going through some stuff. I don't like to be like, that sucks. I'm sorry. Do you have someone you could talk to? Dr. Steve might have some openings. So I told you I went to EMDR.
Yeah.
Well, I told you I went on this road trip last week. I told you I went on this last session, went on the road trip.
Yeah, I'm with you.
Talked about it. I also then went to EMDR and we focused on sort of my origin, my big panic attack I had when I was 10 or 11, 12.
Six?
No.
That's a different one.
six is probably way too early for the TV thing.
Uh-huh.
I think that all started around 8 to 10. Honestly, I had to have been 10.
Must have been an old ass TV.
Oh yeah, it was a tube TV. You know where
it has to be.
The front was
the only a tube
bubble.
TVs do that.
Yep.
That was our first conversation ever.
Was it?
I think so.
Yeah, I bet I would have started there. So she asked me to, you know, think about it, delve through it. And we spent about, it was like a 20-minute, 30-minute EMDR session. Just my brain went everywhere, all over the place. But afterwards, we were debriefing, and she asked me if I still had panic attacks. I said no, but what was really weird about the EMDR session was, as I was thinking about sort and processing this anxiety I had about whether or not I was awake or in a coma.
Yeah.
I was reminded, all I could picture in my head was trying to step, like standing in a blank, like a dark universe, just like nothing under my feet.
Mm.
And how I interpreted that analogy was like, at that period in my life, when you question
existence,
there was no respite. Like it wasn't like, oh, I can go to my room and just chill out.
Yeah, no because foundation, nothing to rest on, nothing to...
Constant anxiety. Any situation at all time.
Yeah.
Well, is this chair real? Is this bed? Oh my God, my bedroom's not real. What about this photo? That's not, you know, just constant state of worrying. Yeah, and I was...
Unease.
All I could think about was how exhausting that was. And it made me so sad just to think that I was, and a part of me is like, that was so unnecessary. Why were you spending so much energy?
Yeah. So in EMDR, you're thinking that, like you're looking back and going, why was I spending all that energy?
But in the sense of like, man, that sucked.
That I was there at that time in my life.
And she asked like, well, do you still have panic attacks? And I said, no, but I had a tremor of that feeling. When I get stressed and I'm anxious, it is reminiscent of that feeling of when I was sitting in my room, just my mind racing, panic.
Yeah, like a glimpse, a glimmer.
And it was very uncomfortable to feel that glimmer. But all of that work is what led me to then my conversation with George, which is, you know, I don't like looking people in the eye because I don't want them. I feel like I've gotten really good at coping with that anxiety. Mm. I don't think it healed. I don't think it went away. I think I just got, it's like when you get punched in the arm, it hurts and then it just hurts less and less and less. Until finally you're just totally calloused.
Mm.
And I'm excited to sort of try healing, but the EMDR session was intense. And I just went all these different directions. I mean, there was one point where I was sort of reliving. I remember she had asked me, why would you go into your parents' room? I told her when I would have these panic attacks, I'd go into my parents' room. And I couldn't remember. I was like, I don't know. It's just where I went. But the more I thought about it, the more I realized it was because in my house, there were only two doors that had locks on them. And one of them was my parents' bedroom.
Yeah.
And so I would go in there and lock the door. And that's where I would, when I was really panicking, that's where I would do it. So no one could bother me. You know, my brother wouldn't have to worry about him.
So your parents weren't in there?
Yeah, no, I'd be by myself in there. And then if it was really bad, I'd then go into they had a bathroom in their bedroom.
Uh-huh.
And that door had a lock
double
too.
Double lock. Mm-hmm.
And I was just so, I didn't want people to discover me in my state of panic.
Mm, yeah.
Because it would be embarrassing for me.
Yeah.
So I would lock the doors and I would just panic in there. And that came up.
And then when the panic attack was over, how would the panic attack end?
I just would be alive. you know, it would be like, okay, well, I'm dying. Uh-oh, this is it. And then the longer I would not die, the more I'd be like, okay, well, this is pretty good evidence that maybe we're okay. And then at some point, I would just be like, I think maybe panicked out. I don't know. Maybe it would just, the adrenaline would be like, all right, we're out. We did our course. We got no more adrenaline left. And then that would be it. But usually I would just panic my way through it and then go back as if, you know, go back to normal. Like I wouldn't talk. It was just, I just would, yeah, just have a panic attack. Mm-hmm. Back to work kind of a thing. Mm-hmm. And then also, you know, I was thinking about this one big panic attack and I started thinking about what it would, I started talking to myself like, you know, my younger self, like what I wish someone would have said, which is, hey, you know, what you're going through, super scary, but you are so fine. Don't worry. Like, yeah, you are safe. And what you're experiencing is something that we can work through. We'll, you know, we'll get you someone to talk about. And then I thought about how when I told that evening, I had a really big panic attack. And I went and told my parents and they were sort of like, well, you're just tired, or, you know, they were a little, it was equal parts like, oh God, not this again. And mm-hmm. like embarrassed because my aunt was staying with us because her house was under mm-hmm. construction. And I just remember thinking to myself how different it would be if they were like, oh, you know, Alex is going through this thing. We're trying to work with them, you know, much like when you treat someone who's having like an overstimulus, you know, like people who suffer from autism or something, mm-hmm. when they have episodes where it's like, you know, their parents typically aren't like, you know, oh, just tough it out. You know, they're right. like, oh, my, you know, my child has this condition and they just need quiet space and they need reassurance. Mm-hmm. You know, like, I don't know how to articulate what I'm describing here, but maybe it's just more so like taking it seriously or, you know, being kind about it, mm-hmm. accepting of it. I started thinking about what my situation would have been like then. And then in this weird turn of events, I started imagining what would it have been like if Haley had been there.
When you're having the panic attack.
Yeah, as a kid. And just because to me, she represents such a figure of like love and care.
Yeah.
And I just thought of her like consoling me and just being like, it's okay. You know? And I remember telling my EMDR lady, I was like, I kind of feel uncomfortable being having my younger self like
being consoled
by my
romantic partner.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Yes. But I don't, it just popped into my head. I think because Haley is like one of the few people I have in my life who is remotely close to someone who has that amount of care and in her, you know?
So, yep, care. I'm hearing safety.
Yeah.
And I think about what a dramatically different course of action if you are having a panic attack and you go to somebody instead of isolating, right? For fear and shame about my deficits, but you go to you seek out your mom, you seek out your dad, yeah. you seek out your brother, whatever. You seek out someone and they grab your hand and say, I will be here the yeah. whole time. You know, I don't know what you're doing. I don't know, but I can see your breath. I can see you're scared. I can see, you know, I will be here. If you just need to sit on my lap, if you just need me to be in the room, do you need me to hold hands?
Do you need to be hugged? Do you need like compression right. or... you know, auditory, like, do you need to listen to music? That would have been so dope. But, yeah. And I think, I don't know if this is the process of EMDR, but it's I have an inkling, it's like revisiting. Like when I revisited that panic attack, I could visualize like, what are things that I would have told myself or how would I have helped? Mm-hmm. How would I have walked myself through it? And yeah. I know how to walk myself through it now. And if I saw someone with a panic attack currently, I'd be like, dude, I've been there. I know exactly what you're going through. The first thing you need to know is you're okay. You're safe. I am here for you. I will watch out for you. I'll take care of you. Do not worry. Mm. It's just tough. When I was a kid, I think I started that way, like going to my parents, hey, this is what's going on, and being met with this sort of like... You know, this is an annoyance to me because I don't understand this. This is weird. This is burdensome. And so then I just learned to be
this
like...
This is a reflection on my bad parenting.
Or it's like, I don't have time for this. I don't, it doesn't make any sense to me. So figure it out.
Yeah.
If you come to me with a cut, okay, that's one thing. I'll put a Band-Aid on you. Got it. But you come to me with this weird thing that doesn't make any sense, you're on your own, kid. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And so then I just learned to be like, all right.
I'm on my own.
I don't want to get in trouble for this panic. I don't want to get, you know, be made, you know, I don't want her to bring it to my brother's attention. My brother's going to make fun of me. He's going to call me weird. I'm just going to go off, lock a room. No one will know. I'll just panic on my own. So that was an intense EMDR session. My brain went all over the place.
Yeah, and I think what you described is what happens to most people who suffer from things related to the human condition and then isolate.
Yeah.
I mean, in the AA world, they talk about, you know, there's a saying that families are as sick as their secrets. And people who have struggled with addiction will say, yeah, there is a whole life of secrecy around the addiction. And one of the most powerful things can be going to that AA meeting and saying, I also struggle with an addiction. I become powerless. I mean, not everybody buys into the 12-step model, but there's a lot of people who do, and it's worked really well for a lot of people. But to be able to sit in a room with other people and have a testifying event where other people can say, yep, you're an addict, you're a drunk like I am, and you still matter.
Yeah.
And we're not giving up on you, and we're here to walk you through your panic attack. We're here to listen to the worst thing you've ever done and still let you be okay. It reminds me of that quote I think we've talked in here before from Brian Stevenson, who is that Harvard lawyer who runs a project down in Alabama trying to get people who have been wrongfully death row committed to get them off. Anyway, he says, I believe that people are more than the worst thing they've done. And to me, that's like, wow, if human beings could adopt that with everybody. Yeah. Okay, yeah, you just did this. You offended me in this way, or you did that, but you are more. There's more to you than the worst thing that you've done. And so I'm going to reserve my judgment about you because of your crazy ideas, or you think too much, or because there's more to you than that. And I want people to apply that same standard to me. Yep, I've done some stupid things in my life, but can you see that I'm more than the stupid things I've done? I'm more than the addict. I'm more than the murderer. I'm more than... And that kind of compassion, I think, is an amazing gift to give to another human being.
It's also really hard to achieve in a weird way. I don't know, you know.
But as I'm talking about it, what's going on for you inside when I say those things?
You know, it's funny because my mind just started wandering. I was like daydreaming.
I thought I was being profound. Anyway.
You were. You know, what's really funny is when you were talking about that Stanford professor, law professor or whatever, law professor, maybe you didn't say Stanford.
No, Harvard. Harvard. Brian Stevenson. Yeah.
And you were talking about that quote. I was just like, oh, I got to clip this. This has got to be a little thing and we put on it.
It's the problem with this process.
Yeah. Yes.
Because this process requires you to be the producer.
Yes.
And the...
Yeah. Well, when you're bootstrapped, you got to wear a lot of hats. But it makes me...
And you have 10 of them, so we're good.
I mean, in an ideal world, yeah, someone could say, yeah, I would have loved to experience that compassion. And I think that's a part of me why I enjoy doing this podcast is because a lot of it is, hey, here's the stuff that I carried with me. And I'm throwing it out there and I'm still alive and I still have friends. People have heard it and they still talk to me. Oh,
that's... Not only just talk to you, but there have been at least a handful of people who have come to you and said, thank you for sharing this because now I'm getting some help. I've heard what you had to say in the podcast and it's impacted me this way. This is what you and I both were hoping would happen.
So to that point, I mean, there is something very freeing about, you know, not holding on to these as quote unquote secrets.
Yeah.
Or not being ashamed of it. I think it's just more so, yeah, it is. I don't talk about these things because I was afraid of being ashamed. You know, I was afraid of being shamed for having panic attacks when I was a kid.
Yeah.
I'm afraid of talking about it for the same reason. I don't want to. I've been sort of taught to think, well, people are going to think this is weird and bad and deficiency. I just can't imagine like having to see a murderer as more than a murderer. Like that's an extreme. That would be hard. I mean, that's the extreme of like, you're not just, you're the worst thing you've ever done. But it's true. People are complicated. Yeah.
I mean, that takes a certain belief about the world, a belief about maybe the universe even.
Yeah.
A belief about human beings, human nature.
I'm just trying to get people to forgive me for having panic attacks, man. Murder is just...
But do you need forgiveness for that?
No. I just need to know that it was okay. Everything happened exactly the way it was going to happen. It wasn't because I did something wrong. I didn't handle it the wrong way. Just part of life. That was my journey. And all things considered, I handled it really well. And I'm working on it now.
Right. I'm working on it now. And if I were to do it again, would I go behind the locked door and then the other locked door with my panic attack? Or would I reach out to somebody? Or what would...
Well, that's the tricky part. Because I don't know who I would have reached out to.
No. That was then.
Yeah.
What I'm talking about is now.
Oh, now.
The panic attack you have next week.
Yeah.
Will I default to the old and go to the behind the locked doors and suffer in silence? Or will I reach out to George, to Steve, Dr. Steve, or Dr. EMDR? And will I reach out and go, okay, this thing has happened again.
Yes.
And I know now that I don't have to do this by myself.
Yeah. 100, yes. Without a
doubt. And then the next generation, that you become more in tune with your kid, and when your kid has the panic attack, you go, no, you come to me and mom.
Yep.
You come to us, and we'll sit with you, and we'll have a panic attack together.
Yeah, that would have been like the biggest sigh of relief if I could have heard that, like, hey man, next time you have this, come to us. I would have been like, thank you, Jesus, because this is terrifying to do on my own, and I hate it. Oh my God, thank you. It's interesting you say that, because if I were to have a panic attack like tomorrow, I would be worried about doing it in front of Haley, because I don't know how she would handle it.
That's the old script. The new script says Haley deserves a chance to not to see me in that state, but to see how she reacts.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like when I'm not at my best, how do you still want to marry me? When I'm not my best?
I'm afraid of that. We've talked about this. And
you and I, or you and Haley?
Haley and I in our marriage counseling.
Yeah.
Where I feel a lot of
pressure. Too many counselors.
You're telling me, man. I feel a lot of pressure to be at my best all the time. Because if I slip, I don't want her to feel like she's got to carry the load. Because I'm worried it might overwhelm her.
I guarantee you there will come a time when she has to carry the load.
Yeah. I'm scared about that.
And you're going to have to figure out, like, okay, it's on you, babe, because I can't do it right now.
She's got this, we've talked about this, she has this tendency to fight, flight, or freeze. She's free. She's an inker. She inks. I inked.
That's right.
Yeah. And I worry that if I were to have a panic attack, she would just be like, oh my God, what is going on? And she's just immobilizing her.
Okay, so she might. Let's say she does. But then you guys get to talk about that.
Yeah,
then the next day, the next week, the next hour.
She wouldn't get mad at me, that's for sure. She wouldn't be like,
that's awesome. So you wouldn't be an inconvenience.
No. She just wouldn't know what to do. She'd want to help, but not know how. That's what it is.
And then you can process that.
Yeah.
Because in that moment, you might go back to the old script of, wait, Dr. Steve is telling me to reach out, and I reach out and I'm left
hanging. Yeah.
And some people call those attachment wounds. When you reach out to your loved one, the person you're putting all your eggs in her basket, and she doesn't respond the way you want. And
yeah.
You feel abandoned. You feel hopeless. You feel
alone,
but you can, you can process those things and you can realize, mm-hmm. hey, Haley's human too. Haley has her moments of
areas of growth,
moments of dissociation, or, you know, like maybe she would choose to do it differently next time as well.
Yes. I think what I have tons of faith in is knowing that at the core, she will always want to help. As opposed to, I've been around people who are like, when you're in need, they're like, fine. Mm-hmm. Haley's never that way. She's like, how can I help? It's just a question of understanding how to help.
Yeah.
Not, you know, her having to, wanting, I mean, she suffers from the same thing I do, which is like, she's such a, not perfectionist, but she will want to help the right way, and she'll put a lot of pressure on herself to help the right way. And when she doesn't know, it's tougher. She's like, what if I mess up and I don't help them the right way?
Yeah.
Which, you know, in a weird way, that's reassuring. Just speaks to her caring, but.
I keep waiting for the day when your folks listen to this and go, hey, you got some issues with us.
I know. I just saw them, you know, to pick up the car. And we talked about the podcast, and it was so funny. I was talking about it, and my dad was like, what is this? He's from France. He's got French.
I know that.
Yeah. And my mom was like, Alex. His podcast. He's like, your podcast? I was like, he does his therapy on a podcast. And la, geez, how many times we got to? I was just like, neither of you guys. He's like, oh, where can I find the podcast? I was like, we're going to have this conversation like 10 more times.
They'll find it when they find out that they come up.
Yeah, I'm not good. I mean, I assume someone, I think my aunt might listen. I don't know. So a part of me thinks that they know and they have listened to it, but we're not going to broach that subject. Yeah.
And I think our whatever work you could do with me.
Yeah, to get myself to talk to them.
About. No, I'm just saying whatever work you could do with me will be hampered, slowed, because I think there's things we don't talk about your folks.
Yeah. Yes.
That you can do with George.
That I can do with George, and I can do or with EMDR.
Sister EMDR.
Yep. Yeah. Yep. Yeah, and even that, like, going to pick up the car, like, we can't dive into it, but even that was required. You know, you ask, like, do you have conversations? Like, I have challenging conversations with them all the time about a variety of stuff. And that, you know, it's tough.
Yeah.
As they get older, I feel like it's more my responsibility to like make sure that they're healthy and happy. And that requires some really tough conversations. And that can, it's just the last 4 weeks, man. Luckily, I'm going on a completely absurd trip that won't be stressful at all.
Yeah. Right. Couple. Couple.
No, it'll be fun. It'll be good too. Get out and to explore the world. But another thing that I was thinking about when I was listening to our podcasts is I was like, how am I going to sunset this thing? Which is something you've asked, right? Because I just remember thinking like, the more episodes that we do, the more that I'll want to continue to do it. And it'll get harder and harder for me to be like, all right, because once we stop doing the podcast, we'll stop seeing each other. You know, and it's come to a point where what? We're on episode 37 or 38. You know, that's in theory 38 weeks, wink, wink, that we've seen each other. And I was thinking about that too.
Yeah.
Like, it would be weird for you to be like, oh, that's it. Not seeing Alex ever again. I imagine. Maybe not. Maybe you'd be like, no.
I mean, it's so much of my life is like that with people.
Yeah. Yeah.
And then people come to my mind and I'll shoot them an email like, hey, thought about you today. Hope you're doing well. Some people respond. Most don't. Most people are like, I don't want to remember those things that we talked about in there. Because for a lot of people, therapy is a painful place.
Yeah.
It's not like a, yay, I get to go see Steve.
Well, to clarify, I'm never like that.
Yeah. Most people aren't. Especially my kids.
Yeah. So you have a daughter that's 26?
Yeah, I think so. 25, 26. I think I have a daughter.
Yeah. Did you say that on the podcast?
Maybe.
Yeah.
Is that bad? Do we need to edit that out?
No, I was getting, because I always assumed, I mean, you're older, aren't you? How old were you when you started having kids?
Older than my daughter, yeah.
Yeah. Because you're like, what, 60?
Why is this important information for you to know?
Alex? I want to understand how much old, like, are you an old dad or are you a normal age dad?
What the crap? So like a normal age dad?
Like a dad who's like, oh, I was 30 when I had my kids versus I was 40 when I had my kids.
Yeah. How old do you think I am?
You told me you're 60.
Holy chunt. No.
You didn't?
I did not say I'm 60.
Oh.
57.
57, okay. Then never mind. I thought you were like 66. That's why I was like, man, he's really
66.
I have a memory of you being like, yeah, I'm 60 something. Wow. And I remember being like, yeah, he's really active for his age.
66.
Okay, that makes more sense because my dad is older. You know, he had me when he was 40. And it's different from all my other friends. Like their dads are like 10 years younger than my dad.
Yeah.
And I feel like I've started thinking about like, okay, I mean, realistically speaking, I might only have 10 more years with my dad or something like that.
Yeah.
And that's sort of been weird for me.
Yeah, my kids might only have 10 more years with me if I'm 66.
Good. I want you to be like, man, do I need to maybe
hug my kids?
Yeah. Yeah, but no, 57 is a good year. It's a good age. Still got a lot you can get done. Not AARP yet.
Yeah, I am. They keep sending me stuff.
Do they? Well, good, make good coupons stuff.
I think about that occasionally, about the sunsetting of this, and
yeah.
Like if Alex, the producer Alex, didn't feel so much like I've got to drop a new episode every Friday.
Yeah, I know.
Like real therapy is not like that. Real therapy is I think I'm taking a break for a little bit. And holy crap, this thing just happened. I need to get in and see you.
Yeah.
And so to me, that could be a very natural.
Yep.
But
the producer in me is like, we got to be consistent.
Right.
We got to build that audience.
But if you were hoping to build an audience and build a brand, that is antithetical to therapy.
I know. That's the rub. I'm always trying to build brands. That's what I do.
But you could have your EMDR person come in here and do EMDR. You could say,
well, they should like it. What I want to do is I want to start talking, like interviewing, if you will, other people. Like, I think I told you about this. There are a lot of social media accounts that just share like mental health quotes.
And, yeah.
You know, they have big followings and they're just humans who run them. And I want to interview those
just
people.
Humans.
Yeah. Not like brands, you know, not corporations. Yeah. I mean, they're just hobbyists.
Yeah.
And I want to interview them and be like, do you go to therapy? Like, how did you get your interest in therapy? I have this podcast. Like, let's talk about therapy. I kind of want to talk to other patients.
Yeah.
And learn about, you know, it might be a little nerve-wracking for them to talk about their own therapy, but I thought maybe if I show, hey, I've been doing it, so you're safe with me, kind of a thing. You know, we can talk about whatever you want to talk about. There's one person I really want to. She's notable in my mind. She's a professional women's hockey player. I think she plays for Toronto's team, and she's like a big mental health advocate.
Uh-huh.
And I think I'm going to shoot her a DM and be like, hey, would you ever want to talk about mental health therapy? So anyway, that's a long-winded way of saying I've thought about that as an avenue. So
yeah,
we don't have to meet all the time, and I could do it more casually.
But I mean, I see a day like this for all of my clients when you don't need to come and see me anymore.
Do you say like, hey, so this is it. This is our graduation.
Sometimes.
Yeah. Other times they just don't ever call.
Other times it's like, we'll call if we need
to
come back, and they don't call. And
my chiropractor.
And I'm assuming they're doing good.
Yep.
And doing good includes we're human beings and we are subject to the human condition like everybody else, and doesn't mean our lives are great. It doesn't mean we've solved all our problems. Doesn't mean our marriage is the best, but yeah, we're okay.
That's a great place to wrap up.
Yeah. Be kind to yourself.
But yeah, I was just going to say, yeah, we got a new catchphrase. It's not about staying happy or unhappy, whatever you're feeling, be kind to yourself.
Take care.
Goodbye.